Hey!
91.
That's 91. Old. That's really old.
Do you think you'll live to be 91?
I hope so. My grandfather's 95.
Really?
So I really hope that I get to be that
old.
You know,
I always think that I'll live to be 88.
Why?
I don't know. It's a really arbitrary...
Two fat ladies.
Yeah, two fat ladies, exactly. But now that I think about it, you know, recently I've been thinking, I'd quite like to live beyond 88.
I think that's a goal, Balin,
yeah,
you know.
But you know, 88 always seemed like the kind of the place to be. But now that I'm reaching my 40s, I'm like, that means half my life is
you
over.
You might have to revise that.
Anyway. Yes. Hello.
Hello. This is Homo Lab. That is Balin Leonard.
That's Amy LeMay.
And we're missing little Lucio.
Little Lucio's missing. He is...
he's got a real job.
He's got a real job.
Imagine
now.
That.
So us who work, you know... in this
flexible hours,
flexible
shall we say.
Hours, and usually under the cover of darkness.
Yeah,
we can record whenever we want. So, but yeah, Lucio's working, and he's also on his way off to Dublin. So, and you're going to Salzburg.
Yeah,
everybody's going everywhere. Yeah. I, of course, will be sat in London as usual. But so yeah, we're recording this episode from your very glamorous dressing room, Amy, on the last week of your highly successful return. To the off West End with Unhappy Birthday.
Yeah, I know. I can't believe it's gone so quickly, right?
Yeah, it's flown by.
And Balin's been doing lights, and he has a very crucial role right at the end of the show where he has to throw a balloon into the audience.
Yes.
And you do that marvelously every night,
thank
Balin.
Thank you.
Thank perfect.
You.
Great timing.
I'll be great at it by the end of the show.
But we got loads coming up on the show. You've done an interview with a really great performance.
A performance poet. Now, don't let that frighten you, because I think a lot of people are like, what is a performance poet? And is it a beatnik? And I talked to him about this, and he's going to tell us whether it is or whether it's not. But his name is Fergus Evans, and he's originally from Atlanta, from Hotlanta.
Fellow Southern boy like you.
Yeah, and he now lives in the UK and performs all over. And he's got a show called My Heart is Hitchhiking, and he's also got a new book out. So we're going to talk to him. But also, we've got quite an exciting, since Lucio's not here, he sent us an interview that he did with none other than Charlene Spiteri.
You're joking.
Lead singer
from
of Texas.
Texas?
Yes. So he had a chance to sit down with her in, I can't remember if it was in Brighton or if it was here in central London. But yeah, they sat down and had a good old chat.
She's a feisty lady too.
Well, listen, you're going to see how feisty she is when we play this interview out towards the end of the podcast, because you may have heard there's been a bit of beef between her and Elizabeth Hurley.
Yes.
Lucio asks her about it. And in,
he's very brave.
Yeah. But so you'll wait and see what her response to that
okay.
was. But obviously, you know, they've got a new album out, and there's a tour and all that stuff is on the way. But mainly, you know, they get a bit juicy, Lucio and Charlene, because Lucio has family from Glasgow.
Oh yeah,
so he can
so
kind
he's
of
milking it for all its
yeah,
worth.
Yeah, so listen, that's all coming up. So we're looking forward to that, and of course, we're going to have some gay star news.
We are. And how's your week been, Balin?
It's been good. Last night I was DJing at the Science Museum.
Cool.
There was this big, you know, museums do these things late, where they're open late,
yeah.
like one night a month, and they have some big party. And I think Ducky has done some.
Yeah, yeah, we've done a few.
Where was it? The Tate Britain.
Tate Britain, yeah.
A few other places. Well, last night the Science Museum was doing one called Sexuality. Now,
really?
I always thought the Science Museum was for kids.
Yeah.
It's not.
Really?
It certainly wasn't last night. So, yeah, me and Timbalina were doing Bingo, the big bingo show that we do every Monday at the RBT. And also I was DJing. And they had, like, Victorian sex toys on display.
You're joking.
Yeah, that was the most popular exhibit. Like, literally people crowded around these basic suitcases that look like old sewing machines inside with these detachable heads that, you know, you would put on them and like, with like a
sexy
a fan belt motor, you know, like they were going for it. But yeah, and you know, there was other DJs, and there was talks, and there was tours, and there was a sexuality pub quiz, and there were people talking about, you know, the code breaker, Alan Turing.
Alan Turing, yeah.
Because, you know,
of
obviously,
course, yeah, he had electroshock therapy, didn't he?
Yeah, to cure his homosexuality. So, yeah, it was a really good night, really fun. They had bars all over the place, and it was good.
Oh, gosh.
It was all good, so I was doing that, and, yeah, You've been unhappy birthday.
I've been unhappy birthday. I was up in Manchester over the weekend.
What were you doing up there?
It was a Mars Army meetup.
Oh God!
You know, for Morrissey fans.
Were you flyering? Come to London. See my show.
I did have a few flyers out, but it was more like I was just hanging out with people that I'd never met before, which was quite amazing.
That's always
people
good.
Came from like all over the country. And I spent most of the night dancing with some guy from Hull. I have no idea what his name is. I met him there. And then we just sort of left. He was really nice. And we're just dancing till 4 o'clock in the morning, like an absolute maniac to nothing but Smiths and Morrissey records.
Oh my God.
In my heaven.
Have you not had enough of that doing this show for 3 weeks?
No, never too much.
Wow.
Never too much. But as a result, I did I only slept for about 3 hours and then I came back to London and of course it was like bank holiday. So my girlfriend was like, right, let's go out. Let's go and have some fun. And she decided to take me on this 10-mile walk around North London.
And
it was sunny and I got sunburned. So it was a typical bank holiday.
Yeah, but you know what? That's a funny thing. Everybody got, for once, actually, it was sunny on bank holiday. It wasn't actually that warm, really, but it was sunny and everybody got out.
Yeah.
So I got a sunburn only on the front of my body, not on the back of my body, and it's already, it's faded now. So.
Yeah.
Hey ho.
Oh, well. Shall we crack on? Shall we have some gay star news?
Let's, please.
Homo.
Wow.
Homo.
Well, it's been quite an amazing week for gay marriage,
equal
marriage, really. We're calling it equal marriage.
Marriage
equality,
I think it's
amazing scenes in France on both sides of the argument, both for equal marriage and against, and actually those protesting against equal marriage. It's gotten really violent as well,
that's
hasn't
what
it?
I don't get. Like, they're kind of... I mean, you know, not that I agree, but of course everybody has the right to express their opinion. And I can see how for some people it's quite a difficult leap to kind of get to this gay marriage thing. But surely it's completely belittling their point and showing them up to be the idiots that they are by being violent.
Yeah.
Like, that's not really how you get your point across, is it?
No. No, not at all. It's really scary as well. Anyway.
It's very scary.
The two very handsome gay boys tied the knot. They were the first... couple to do so in France. They're from Montpellier, which is actually one of the most gay-friendly cities in France.
Yeah, I like Montpellier a lot. Yeah. I've been there a few times.
And I've just watched it on the BBC News clip, and you can, of course, see it on Gay Star News as well. But huge congratulations to them. They're absolutely adorable. And I've been getting so many messages from friends, straight friends in France, going, we're so proud to be French for a change. Like, finally somebody's done something really positive.
Do you know what I'm really happy about is that for once, because whenever gay marriage rolls out, wherever it is, there's always loads of media attention around the first gay, civil union
couples,
in that city or the first marriage or whatever it is. And I'm really happy that finally it's a good-looking couple.
A Balin!
No, come on!
What?
Come on! Because, half the time you watch it and you're like, and sometimes it's really sweet. And I'm not talking about, the older couples that have been together for 80 years and can finally get married. Obviously, that's great. But sometimes when you think, oh no, is this the poster couple?
Gay people can be ugly too, Balin.
You don't have to tell me, Amy LeMay. I've been on the scene long enough to know that. But I'm just really happy that they're a good looking couple.
Okay.
And that one isn't 400 years older than the other one. That makes me happy. I've got my French friend Jerome staying with me at the moment. I'm getting ready to go touring around the world. And he's really proud of, he was talking about it last night and he seemed genuinely touched.
Yeah.
He was like, it's such an important day and it was such a, wonderful thing to happen. So, congratulations.
Yeah.
French France.
Yeah. Now I don't know whether the little village where Jenny and I have our place is quite ready for a lesbian wedding.
Well, you guys.
Us and the other 8 inhabitants.
You guys have been going there for a while. I'm sure they're ready for all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to take you from that to your app store on your iPhone or on your smartphone.
Uh-huh.
But in the past, there's been some issues with some apps, there's been a gay cure app and,
how to tell if your son is gay.
How to tell if your son is gay and all that stuff. And iTunes got rid of those apps and they have a very specific policy in place now to remove any sorts of apps or to not accept them. Now, despite that policy, there's a little something called setting captives free. That is okay. the name of the app. If you go to your app store and look up Setting Captives Free.
It's not about releasing sort of caged animals into the wild or anything, is it?
Welcome to Setting Captives Free. This is their blurb. Every day, we help people just like you find freedom from habitual sins and learn to grow in grace. And they go on to talk about, you know, you can escape impurity, you can escape overeating, you can escape substance abuse, gambling, okay. smoking, and more. Now, it's the more that's causing the problem, because they also want to set you free from the bondage of homosexuality. So this is an app that's, of course, absolutely free. And it's got several, you know, loads of different categories. And basically, it's all about how it's a gay cure app, basically.
Okay.
Under any other name, it's a gay cure app that says that homosexuality is wrong, that you're being held captive, and this free app is going to set you free. Now, oddly, iTunes have allowed this on. They haven't taken it off, despite a petition, despite protests. And so I'm just raising this as a point of concern. So if you are an iPhone owner and you have the App Store and you're offended by this, then you should let iTunes know, because not only is it offensive and all of those things, it's also against their policies. And I can guarantee you, if you broke their policies, they wouldn't have any trunk with getting rid of you in whatever way that they do that. So look it up. Setting Captives Free. And, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, by the time you hear this podcast, it'll be gone, but it might not be. So just to let you know, Apple isn't quite the great company that they've
been. Yeah, well, we're certainly finding that out with all of their tax affairs and everything. Yes. So,
and let's not forget, if you're anywhere other than, if you're anywhere in the world where Exxon is a petrol station or a gas station that you use, don't forget that they don't like homosexuals
do
either.
Do they not?
No, they've voted against any sort of, the board of directors have voted against any sort of anti-discrimination clause against homosexuality.
Really?
Homosexuals and lesbians in employment. Mobil actually had a really great same-sex partner benefits program before Exxon took them over. The next day, they got rid of it completely. And they've said that they don't need to have that because it's just not what they do. So think about that the next time you're at the tank filling up if you're pulling into an Exxon Mobil.
Right. Well, you learn something new every day. And I'll tell you what, Baylen, I've got a bit of information that I am sure you have not been privy to before. You know why?
Why?
Because I never even thought such things could exist.
Oh, God. What is it?
Science can now create lesbian mice. Just what the world has been waiting for, okay?
Create.
Yes.
This proves it, that homosexuality and lesbianism is a choice.
Yes.
It's a brain defect. Maybe iTunes is right.
We can grow homosexuality in a petri dish. This is what they're telling us. Basically, it's a group of Chinese researchers have claimed this. It's a new study that's published in a medical journal there that suggests that the neurotransmitter serotonin plays an important role in determining your sexuality.
Okay.
So these are researchers from Peking University in China. They've bred female mice with a lack of serotonin, and they ended up choosing to prefer the company of other females. Well, female mice,
right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So they said that the mice with the mutations, okay, so they've manipulated the genes, okay,
right.
Showed preference for sniffing the head and genital areas of other female mice. The females displayed strong mounting preferences towards females, mounted female targets with shorter latency, higher frequency, and longer duration.
Oh.
Okay? It's a little bit graphic. It's lesbian mice getting it on
for a long time.
Yeah, for a really, really long time. They're doing these experiments with serotonin. I really don't know what it might possibly tell us, really, in the long term. But it's the latest in a long line of exploring the origins of sexuality in science. And scientists last year suggested that epigenetics could determine a person's orientation before they're born.
Right.
So, you know, using a genetic map to work it out and say, how likely are you
to be gay? Or lesbian.
Which I find really scary because parents could choose to terminate a child if they think that the chances of that child being gay are really high.
Well, like both of these things, I mean, they open the doors to interesting things and they open the doors to horrifying things as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because in the States, they had a Gallup poll that was released earlier this month, and it found that 40 47% of people now believe that being gay is something that you're born with. Okay, so what that would lead to you thinking that it's a genetic thing.
Yeah.
And 33% say that it's a preference based on environmental factors. That's quite a change, because back in 1978, the last time they kind of conducted a really major poll on this, only 13% believe that people were gay. So more and more people that they were, that it was genetic
kind of
thing. So, you know, 13% jump to 47% of people thinking that it's something that you're born with. It's an interesting argument, because of course, if people think that you're born with something, it means that, well, you have to accept it. You know, it's like being born, you know, of a particular race or ginger or, you know, or whatever it might be. It's like that this is who you are. We can't change it. You know, it's been one of the overriding arguments for equality on all sorts of levels. But then, of course, like we said, it does open up that debate. If you know that it's something that you're genetically predisposed to, can people try and
weed it out,
manipulate the population in a particular way? So anyway, we'd love to know what you think about all of these stories, courtesy of Gay Star News. You can get in touch. We are hello@homolab.com, or you can just tweet us. We are @homolab.
And that is our Gay Star News.
Homo.
Lab.
Homo.
Lab.
Hey, do you know, just on that thing, I was just thinking, remember when they grew like a human ear on a mouse?
Yeah.
What if they made that one a lesbian?
Then it'd be That'd like, be brilliant.
I mean, I don't know what that... I'm sure there's a pun in there somewhere, but it's just like if one mouse had all the genetic mutations.
Super lesbian. Super lesbian,
lesbian
mouse.
That can hear you really, really well. We're going to have our first interview now. We said we were going to speak to a lovely performance poet from Atlanta, Georgia, and that's exactly what we're going to do now. I met him in this very building. We just went down a level or two. This is Fergus Evans.
Homo.
Loud.
Homo.
Okay, so I now find myself in the bowels of the Camden People's Theatre, outside of some rehearsal rooms, a unisex toilet, and some sort of cloakroom situation. But I'm sat on a very fancy armchair, and opposite me is Fergus Evans, who is a self-described boy-kissing... What? How is it? Boy kissing.
I like how you picked up on boy kissing.
Boy kissing is the main thing that yarn spinning boy kissing poet from Atlanta.
Exactly.
Let's talk about Atlanta first. How long have you been over here?
For about 8 years. I moved over to the UK in 2004, end of 2004.
And what brought you over here from Hotlanta?
I did my master's up in Manchester in gender, sexuality, and culture, and met a boy, and stayed. And then consequently broke up with a boy, so, and still stayed.
Hey, that's how it works. And kind of like me, you probably get accused of losing your accent and not being true to your roots.
Your accent's totally strong. Your accent's way stronger than mine. But yeah, I've completely lost my accent. Most people think I'm from Cornwall. It's a little bit embarrassing. Obviously calls the entire show into question if it doesn't feel like I'm an authentic American.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you're, as an American, saying that I haven't lost my accent, because normally it's all Americans that think I sound like the Queen of England and everybody else who's is very clear that that I'm American. I was doing a voiceover this morning, and I came out of the session, and the audio technician went, "Kentucky?" And I was like, "Oh my God, you're the closest that anybody's ever gotten." I was like, "Tennessee, but very, very good." Because normally I get Australia somehow. But anyway, we're not here to talk about accents. We're talking about let's talk about poetry before we get to your event and kind of what you've been doing. Poetry, has that always been something that's been your thing? Like, I mean, because I always find it fascinating that poets can A, make a living, and B, don't diversify too much and go into, you know, songwriting or you know, I mean, storytelling, obviously, because you're from the South, so that must be a part of it. But poetry.
I mean, it's slightly weird, because when I was living in Atlanta, I was working with a sort of multi-art form collective called No More Productions. And when I moved over here, I just kept on getting booked as a spoken word artist, which was very strange for me. I hadn't necessarily considered myself to be a poet or to be a spoken word artist, but I got a couple of commissions off Apples and Snakes, which is sort of the national organization for spoken word, and found myself sort of plugged into that scene. But since then, I think, you know, like a lot of other spoken word artists, I've diversified. So the work I make borrows from theatre, borrows from storytelling, borrows from live art, which is really exciting. But still a poet, have a collection of poetry out right now, which is...
Oh, tell us about that.
So it's called On Euclid Avenue. It's published by Flapjack Press, which is a small independent press based in Manchester. It's on sale at Amazon, should you wish to have a look at it. But yeah, it's really exciting. It's my first full-length collection of poetry.
And spoken word poetry, it's quite presentational in its style. Or does it, I mean, maybe it's just all of the spoken word that I've seen, but it's always quite presentational in its style. Is that part of the art form, or is that just a personal choice that people make with it?
Well, I think one of the nice things about spoken word is it is such a... amorphous term. It really sort of encompasses a lot of different types of artists and a lot of different styles and approaches. So the work that I make is hopefully very conversational. It doesn't feel like sort of there's a barrier between the performer and the audience, whereas some people, you know, borrow very strongly from hip-hop, so it's very rhythmic.
Yeah.
All those things.
In terms of the scene of spoken word and you know, performance poetry or poetry in general, I've only been to a few places in London where it happens. I know there's some out east in East London that I've been to, and I think there was one around Mile End of all places for spoken word to happen. But what is the scene like for this? Not just in London, but in the UK in general.
I mean, it's fairly developed actually. So organisations like Apples and Snakes have really built up an infrastructure across the country to support local promoters who want to put on either open mic nights or poetry slams. Compared to the US, I would say the UK tends to have a much warmer, much more open spoken word scene, so they're really sort of accepting to first-time people who want to sort of come along and read a poem, maybe, who haven't read in front of a live audience before, whereas... arguably, the US is a little bit more competitive, and there are pluses and minuses to both systems.
The themes of your work, is it always about being gay? Is it about being gay, or is it not at all?
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought so. In fact, when I finished writing the show and was sort of working with a marketing department at the theatre who was co-producing my work, they said, you know, oh, well, there are clearly a lot of gay themes within the work, so we'd like to sort of engage the gay media. And it really surprised me, because I just hadn't thought about how freaking gay the work actually is. It comes out, obviously. It's, you know, it's part of my lived experience. My work is very, very autobiographical, so
right.
I think by default these things sort of show up. But it's probably less intentionally queer than it was maybe a couple of years ago when that felt like a very important political choice to be making as
right.
a performer.
So tell us about your new show.
Yeah. So I'm currently touring a show called My Heart is Hitchhiking Down Peachtree Street. It's a solo show for small audiences, so for about 9 people at a time. It takes place in spaces which aren't normally associated with performance. So it might happen at a theatre, but it's unlikely to happen sort of on stage. It might happen in a broom cupboard or a disused office or a boiler room. And the show itself incorporates storytelling and spoken word. It's interactive, but very gently so don't be scared by that. And incorporates some animation as well.
Okay, so where can people see it coming up?
Yeah, I am going to be at Pulse Festival in Ipswich on the 2nd of June. And then that Saturday and Sunday, which I think is the 6th and 7th of June, up in Harrogate for the Two's Company Festival. And then sort of touring all over the country until the 23rd of November. So plenty of opportunities to see it all over the country.
And what's your website?
My website is www.jfergusevans.com.
Fergus Evans, thank you very much. And best of luck with your tour and your book and everything else. And thanks for coming on Homolab.
Thank you very much, Bailey.
Ho, mo.
Loud.
Ho, mo.
And there you go. I think if you didn't know about performance poetry, that might have changed your attitude about it.
Sounds great, Fergus.
Yeah, he's really sweet as well. I actually saw him in Manchester when I was doing a gig up there DJing, and he was one of the performers. And really captivating on stage, really lovely. Mm. Now from Fergus.
Yeah, we're going to head over to Lucio, who managed to corner Charlene Spiteri and... yeah, got some pretty interesting information out of that lady.
Ho, mo.
Loud.
Ho, mo.
Loud.
Charlene Spiteri, how are you?
I am very good.
How the devil are you?
Do you know what? I've been sat in this little room and I'm quite happy. I ain't quite used to it. I feel like a wee like turtle. I'm like kind of like slowly moving around and doing my thing.
Well, you've been doing a lot of PR. Have you Googled yourself recently? Have you done a Google news search?
Joking. Me Google my. Do you know what? I'm fed up with the sound of my own bloody voice. I might Google myself. It's like, might Google myself to remind myself who I am because I've lost the plot.
Well, there's a lot of. There was the interview you did with the Evening Standard and the stuff about Liz Hurley. And
that was really Scottish there, wasn't it? Yeah.
Are you playing the game?
Okay, you're sitting in front of me. Serious, do I look like I play the game? I was asked a question. Someone had, you know, there was a bit of a comment made about Gwyneth, and I came back and said, no, this is the way it is. I have friends, some are famous, some aren't, but they're all strong women who are at the top of the game at what they do. And they work really hard and they look after their children very well. And there's women and there's girls. And I prefer to be friends with women and that's what I enjoy. And Liz Hurley thing was brought up and I just said, she's rude. I said, she's a rude bitch. And, you know, she should learn some manners. And as my mother would say, she has no bro-upski. And I hardly think that's playing the game because I'd actually said it before many years ago in an interview and it was brought up and I obviously decided to take a big piece on it.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, sometimes I've said, you know, I say things that end up as big deals, but, you know, they're literally, they just happen to have gone that way. There's no big plan. And but decisions that we do make on the band are made purely for the reasons of the band to protect everything that we have because it's the one thing that supplies us with what we want to do.
Do you all still like each other after all this time?
Yeah. We love each other and we hate each other. Yeah. You know, sometimes I might punch the faces in, but, you know, that's the way it is. It's, you know, they're like my brothers. You know, it's like having a load of brothers that get too much to say and know me far too well and can wind me up to no end and literally press the right buttons that will get me going in a second. And I can do the exact same thing to them. But we all know our place in Texas. You know, we know what each other does. None of us are trying to do anybody else's part. And we love the freedom that it's given us, the lifestyle that it's given us. And, you know, we will look after it for that reason.
Talk us through the new album, The Conversation. We've heard the song. It's, you know, been on radio. You must be proud with the amount of airplay that you've been getting.
It's not
with
bad,
the
is it? It's been
so
good.
So congratulations on that. So when did you start writing it?
We went out and started doing dates in 2011. Ali, our guitarist, had a brain aneurysm almost 4 years ago now. And once he got better, we actually thought he's not going to want to do this at all. And funnily enough, he was the one that was like, right, I'm ready, I want to go on the road, I want to go and do dates. And we were like, oh God, really? And so when your mate that's nearly died says that, you're like, right, get your bags packed, we're all going on tour. And you do it. And the feeling of when we got out there and stood on stage, people were just like, oh, you could do a new record, what's happening? It's great to have you back. And suddenly we were like, ooh, God, people actually like us. And so that was why we started writing again and went, okay, right, let's make a new record.
And was the process easy, hard? Is it always easy or hard?
No, it's not always easy. This was really easy. This was really enjoyable. It was a lot of fun. We had no label. We'd finished our contract with Universal after, I think, 27 years. And there was no rush to sign. And we were just like, you know, let's just make a record. Let's just do it at our own pace. And that's what basically we did. We just went ahead and made a record and wrote songs. And we worked with mates. And lucky enough, at the place that we're at, we happen to have some very talented friends and songwriting friends who are musicians who wrote with us, with Johnny and I on this record. People like Richard Hawley and Bernard Butler from Suede and Karen Ann from Girl Called Johnny, and we just all wrote and loads of drunken nights and playing guitars and singing and wailing and exchanging stories and laughing a lot, and it was a really enjoyable record to make.
What is the one Texas song you're most proud of?
Oh, God. God, you know, I can say I Do What I Love Her because it's where it started. But then I'd say Say What You Want, because Say What You Want just took it into completely another sort of stratosphere. It just went kind of massive. And that was the song that was really that broke it for us. You know, those two. You know I was supposed to pick one. I'm going to pick two. Because I can.
I'm not going to argue with you.
Am I that scary?
I'm not saying anything.
Oh, Jesus.
So half my family are from Glasgow. Oh, I'm used God. To it.
I think it's the accent's more scary than anything. That's what it is.
Talking of accent, I love the way I've even prepared this. Say that word.
Definitely.
See, you say it in English way, though. Definitely is normally the way a lot of...
I did say it that way.
Did
definitely.
You? Yeah, there you did. I love the Scottish pronunciation.
I didn't say definitely.
Definitely.
No, I didn't say definitely.
As I love the Scottish pronunciation of that word. It's just a favourite thing.
Yeah, you should try and see Boogie Wonderland. Or Curly Whirly.
I can't do Curly Whirly, but I don't think you can say burglar alarm.
Burglar alarm. It's really hard. I really had to think of it that there.
Charlize Viteri, it has been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ho Mo
Lab.
Ho Mo
Lab.
I kind of think I'm a little bit in love with her.
Yeah. She's cool.
I mean, she's hot, first of all, but also, just as you heard in that interview, she doesn't really take any bullshit.
She doesn't.
Does she?
No, she really does not suffer fools.
No.
And that's an incredibly attractive quality.
I'm hoping that her and Lucio have become really good friends and she's going to come around for dinner.
Oh, no,
soon.
You don't want her coming around for dinner. It'll be like this thing. She'd be like, you call me a bitch. Oh, why do yeah. I can
yeah,
just
maybe.
See it now.
On second thought, maybe you have her around for dinner and we'll just come and watch it all. Well, listen, Amy, you've got a show to do and I've got to go test all the lights. So
yeah,
we should get out
you have
of
to
here.
Blow up your balloon, Balin.
And
that's not a euphemism.
No, literally, I do. You're going to Salzburg. Why?
Yes, I'm going to Salzburg. You may remember some episodes back, maybe about 8 or 10 episodes back, we spoke to John Motherington from the Salzburg Global Seminar.
That I didn't even know existed, but sounded super
cool. I know,
cool.
Yeah. So I have been invited to the Salzburg Global Seminar. This is the first time in its history of sort of like 40 odd years of existing that they are holding a week-long conference on LGBT global rights.
Wow,
and
Amy,
I know,
that sounds really important.
I know, there's like 90 people from all over the world that are going, and I'm one of them, and I'm running a couple of workshops for them, and it's taking place in the palace where they filmed The Sound of Music.
I forgot about this, yes. So
obviously that's why I'm really excited, because I get to like live out my Liesl fetish.
Oh my God, wow.
Yeah, so...
Fucking have fun there.
Thanks. But what I'll be doing is I will be reporting for Homo Lab One there.
Of course.
Doing as many interviews as I possibly can about all sorts of interesting things that are going around the world and getting, I'm sure, a lot of stories that we just don't get to hear.
Yeah.
I know there are lots of people coming from Africa, lots from Asia, lots from South America, and from countries that I know have very, very challenging situations for LGBT people. So in a week or two, I'll be reporting back from Salzburg.
Interesting and fun, Amy LeMay. Interesting and fun. Well, everybody have an amazing week.
We've been the Queers in Your Ears, and we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.
Ho Mo
Lab.
Ho Mo
Lab.